38. Do you know the name of this neighborhood? Sephira asked. She stared, numbed, dismayed at the charred and ghastly landscape of ruined houses and abandoned vehicles that they had entered. It was a little before midday, the third day of their flight from the sanctuary. The unsparing light of Onos mercilessly illuminated every blackened wall, every shattered window. Theremin shook his head. It was called something silly, you can be sure of that. Golden Acres or Sorrow Estates or something like that. But what it was called isn't important now. This isn't a neighborhood anymore. What we have here used to be real estate, Sephira, but these days what it is archaeology, one of the lost suburbs of Sorrow. They had reached a point well south of the forest, almost to the outskirts of the suburban belt that constituted the southern fringes of Sorrow City. Beyond lay agricultural zones, small towns, and somewhere far in the distance, unthinkably far, their goal of Umgando National Park. The crossing of the forest had taken them 2 days. They had slept the first evening at Theremin's old lean-to, and the second one in a thicket, halfway up the rugged slope leading to Onos Heights. In all this while, they had had no indication that the fire patrol was on their trail. Altenal had apparently made no attempt to pursue them, even though they had taken weapons with them and 2 bulging backpacks of provisions. And surely, Sephira thought, they were beyond his reach by now. She said, "The Great Southern Highway ought to be somewhere around here, shouldn't it?" "Another 2 or 3 miles. If we're lucky, there won't be any fires burning to block us from going forward." "We'll be lucky. Count on it." He laughed. Always the optimist, eh? "It doesn't cost any more than pessimism," she said. "One way or another, we'll get through." "Right. One way or another." They were moving steadily along. Theremin seemed to be making a quick recovery from the beating he had received in the forest, and from his days of virtual starvation. There was an amazing resilience about him. Strong as she was, Sephira had to work hard to keep up with his pace. She was working hard, too, to keep her own spirits up. From the moment of setting out, she had consistently struck a hopeful note, always confident, always certain that they'd make it safely through to Umgando, and that they would find people like themselves, already hard at work there at the job of planning the reconstruction of the world. But inwardly, Sephira wasn't so sure. And the farther she and Theremin went into these once pleasant suburban regions, the more difficult it was to fight back horror, shock, despair, a sense of total defeat. It was a nightmare world. There was no escaping the enormity of it. Everywhere you turned, you saw destruction. "Look," she thought. "Look. The desolation, the scars, the fallen buildings, the walls already overrun by the first weeds, occupied already by the early platoons of lizards. Everywhere the marks of that terrible night when the gods had once more sent their curse against the world. The awful, acrid smell of black smoke rising from the remains of fires that the recent rains had extinguished. The other smoke, white and piercing, curling upward out of basements still ablaze. The stains on everything. The bodies in the streets twisted in their final agonies. The looks of madness in the eyes of those few lingering living people who now and then peered out from the remains of their homes. All glory vanished. All greatness gone. Everything in ruins. Everything. As if the ocean had risen, she thought, and swept all our achievements into oblivion. Sephira was no stranger to ruins. She had spent her whole professional life digging in them. But the ruins she had excavated were ancient ones, time-mellowed and mysterious and romantic. What she saw here now was all too immediate, all too painful to behold. And there was nothing at all romantic about it. She had been able readily enough to come to terms with the downfall of the lost civilizations of the past. It carried little emotional charge for her. But now, it was her own epoch that had been swept into the discard bin of history, and that was hard to bear. Why had it happened? She asked herself. Why? 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 Were we so evil? Had we strayed so far from the path of the gods that we needed to be punished this way? No. No. There are no gods. There was no punishment. Of that much Sephira was still certain. She had no doubt that this was simply the working of blind fate, brought about by the impersonal movements of inanimate and uncaring worlds and suns, drawing together every 2,000 years in dispassionate coincidence. That was all. An accident. An accident that Kalgash had been forced to endure over and over again during its history. From time to time, the stars would appear in all their frightful majesty, and in a desperate, terror-kindled agony, man would unknowingly turn his hand against his own works, driven mad by the darkness, driven mad by the ferocious light of the stars. It was an unending cycle. The ashes of Thambo had told the whole tale. And now it was Thambo all over again, just as Theremin had said. This place is archaeology now. Exactly. The world they had known was gone. But we are still here, she thought. What shall we do? What shall we do? The only comfort she could find amidst the bleakness was the memory of that first evening with Theremin in the sanctuary. So sudden, so unexpected, so wonderful. She kept going back to it in her mind over and over. His oddly shy smile as he asked her to stay with him. No sly, seductive trick, that. And the look in his eyes, and the feel of his hands against her skin, his embrace, his breath mingling with hers. How long it had been since she had been with a man. She had almost forgotten what it was like. Almost. And always those other times there had been the uneasy sense of making a mistake, of taking a false path, of committing herself to a journey she should not be taking. It had not been that way with Theremin. Simply a dropping of barriers and pretenses and fears, a joyful yielding, an admission, finally, that in this torn and tortured world she must no longer go it alone, that it was necessary to form an alliance, and that Theremin, straightforward and blunt and even a little coarse, strong and determined and dependable, was the ally she needed and wanted. And so she had given herself at last, unhesitatingly and without regret. What an irony, she thought, that it had taken the end of the world to bring her to the point of falling in love. But at least she had that. Everything else might be lost, but at least she had that. Look there, she said, pointing, a highway sign. It was a shield of green metal, hanging at a crazy angle from a lamppost, its surface blackened by smoke stains. In three or four places it was punctured by what probably were bullet holes. But the bright yellow lettering was still reasonably legible. Great Southern Highway, and an arrow instructing them to go straight ahead. It can't be more than another mile or two from here, Theremin said. We ought to reach it by... There was a sudden high whining sound, and then a twanging crash, reverberating with stunning impact. Sephira covered her ears. A moment later she felt Theremin hooking his arm through hers, pulling her to the ground. Get down, he whispered harshly. Somebody's firing. Who? Where? His needle gun was in his hand. She drew hers also. Glancing up, she saw that the projectile had struck the highway sign. There was a new hole in it between the first two words, obliterating several of the letters. Theremin, crouching, was moving in a quick shuffle toward the edge of the nearest building. Sephira followed him, feeling hideously exposed. This was worse than standing naked in front of Altenahl on the fire patrol. 1,000 times worse. The next shot might come at any moment, from any direction, and she had no way to protect herself. Even when she pulled herself around the corner of the building and huddled up against Theremin in the alleyway, breathing hard, her heart pounding, she felt no assurance that she was safe. He nodded toward a row of burned-out houses on the other side of the street. Two or three of them were intact, down near the opposite corner. And now she saw grimy, shadowy faces peering out of an upstairs window of the farthest one. People in there. Squatters, I bet. Crazies. I see them. Not afraid of our patrol neckerchiefs. Maybe the patrol doesn't mean anything to them this far out of town. Or maybe they were shooting at us because we're wearing them. You think so? Anything's possible. Theremin edged forward a little way. What I wonder is, were they trying to hit us, and is their aim really lousy, or were they just trying to scare us? If they tried to shoot at us and the best they could do was hit the highway sign, then we could try making a run for it, but if it's just a warning... That's what I suspect it was. A shot that went astray isn't likely to have gone astray right into the highway sign. That's too neat. Probably so, Theremin said. He scowled. I think I'm going to let them know we're armed, just to discourage them from trying to send a few scouts sneaking around one of these houses and coming up on us from the rear. He looked down at his needler, adjusting the aperture to wide beam and maximum distance. Then he raised it and squeezed off a single shot. A bolt of red light sizzled through the air and struck the ground just in front of the building where the faces had appeared. An angry, charred spot appeared on the lawn, and wisps of smoke came curling up. Sephira asked, "Do you think they saw that?" Unless they're so far gone that they aren't capable of paying attention, but my guess is that they saw all right, and didn't like it much. The faces were back at the window. Stay down, Theremin warned. They've got some kind of heavy hunting rifle. I can see its snout. There was another whining sound, another tremendous crash. A highway sign, shattered, fell to the ground. They may be crazies, Safara said, but their aim is pretty damn good. Too good. They were just playing with us when they fired that first shot, laughing at us. They're telling us that if we show our noses, they'll blow us away. They've got us pinned down, and they're enjoying it. Can we get out of here, down the far end of this alley? That's all rubble back there, and more squatters waiting for us on the other side, for all we know. Then what are we going to do? Set that house on fire, Theramin said. Burn them out, and kill them if they're too crazy to surrender. Her eyes widened. Kill them? If they give us no other option, yes, yes, I will. Do you want to get to Amgondo, or would you rather spend the rest of your life hiding out here in this alleyway? But you can't just kill people, even though you... Even though they... Her voice trailed off. She didn't know what she was trying to say. Even though they're trying to kill you, Safara? Even though they think it's fun to send a couple of shots whistling past your ears? She made no reply. She had thought she was beginning to understand the way things worked in the monstrous new world that had come into being on the evening of the eclipse, but she realized that she understood nothing. Nothing at all. Theramin had crept out toward the street a short way once again. He was aiming his needler. The incandescent bolt of light struck the white facade of the house down the street. Instantly, the wood began to turn black. Little flamelets sprang up. He drew a line of fire across the front of the building, paused a moment, fired again, tracing a second line across the first. "Give me your gun," he said. "Mine's overheating." She passed him the weapon. He adjusted it and fired a third time. An entire section of the house's front wall was ablaze now. Theramin was cutting through it, aiming his beam toward the interior of the building. Not very long ago, Safara thought, that white wooden house had belonged to someone. People had lived there, a family, proud of their house, their neighborhood, tending their lawn, watering their plants, playing with their pets, giving dinner parties for their friends, sitting on the patio, sipping drinks and watching the suns move through the evening sky. Now, none of that meant anything. Now Theramin was lying on his belly in an alleyway strewn with ashes and rubble across the way, efficiently and systematically setting that house on fire. Because that was the only way that he and she could get safely out of this street and continue on their way to Amgondo Park. A nightmare world, yes. A column of smoke was rising within the house now. The whole left-hand side of its front wall was on fire, and people were leaping from the second-story windows. Three, four, five of them, choking, gasping. Two women, three men. They dropped down on the lawn and lay there a moment as though dazed. Their clothes were ragged and dirty. Their hair was unkempt. Crazies. They had been something else before nightfall. But now they were simply part of that vast horde of wild-eyed, uncouth-looking drifters whose minds had been unhinged perhaps forever by the sudden astounding blast of stunning light that the stars had hurled against their unprepared senses. "Stand up!" Theramin called to them. "Hands in the air! Now, come on, get them up!" He stepped out into full view, holding both of the needle guns. Safara came out beside him. The house was shrouded in heavy smoke now, and within that dark cloak, great, frightful gusts of flame were sweeping upward on all sides of the building, blazing like scarlet banners. Were there still people trapped inside? Who could tell? Did it matter? "Line up there," Theramin ordered. "That's it. Face to the left." They straggled to attention. One man was a little slow, and Theramin sent a needler beam blazing past his cheek to encourage his cooperation. "Start running, now. Down the street. Faster. Faster!" One side of the house caved in with a terrible roaring sound, exposing rooms, closets, furniture, like a doll's house that had been cut away. Everything was on fire. One side of the house caved in with a terrible roaring sound, exposing rooms, closets, furniture, like a doll's house that had been cut away. Everything was on fire. The squatters were almost at the corner now. Theramin continued to shout at them, urging them on, aiming an occasional needle bolt at their heels. Then he turned to Safara. "All right, let's get out of here." They holstered their needlers and went running off in the opposite direction toward the Great Southern Highway. "What if they had come out firing?" Safara asked afterward, when they could see the highway entrance itself just a short distance away and were moving through the open fields that led to it. "Would you really have killed them, Theramin?" He looked at her in a steady, severe way. "If that was the only way we could have gotten ourselves out of that alleyway? I thought I gave you my answer to that before. Of course I would. What choice would I have had? What else could I have done?" Nothing, I suppose, Safira said, her voice barely audible. The image of the burning house still seared her mind, and the sight of those ragged, shabby people running down the street. But they had fired first, she told herself. They had started the trouble. There was no telling how far they would have carried it if Theremin hadn't hit on the idea of burning the house down. The house. Somebody's house. Nobody's house, she corrected. There it is, Theremin said. The Great Southern Highway. It's a nice, smooth, 5-hour drive to Umgando. We could be there by dinner time. If we only had something to drive, said Safira. If, he said.